The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition today. Bundesliga title race, done for another season. Real Madrid come a cropper in Cadiz. More pitch invasions in France, short of sending Sam Kerr, what can be done. Drama in Italy as Jose beats Atalanta. And drama here on the pod with our Secret Santa. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show European edition in association with Paddy Power. Yes, listener, thank you very much for joining us. It's Monday, 20th of December, as we record this with our friends Alvaro Romeo, Rafael Honigstein, James Horncastle, and sort of Jules. He's not actually physically present at this moment, but he will be along a little bit later.
The ghost of Christmas Jules.
Yeah, nice. He'll be making us think long and hard about our actions, as usual. Plenty to discuss, happily. Been full fixture lists around the various continental leagues. Some midweek action on the way in one or two of them as well. Rafa, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, James.
Excellent. That's good. Alvaro, recovered from your breezy trip to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
It was nice. It was freezing because I spent the whole day out since 9 a.m. But I feel fine now. I'm excellent. I'm feeling strong. I'm feeling good.
Excellent. It's Christmas. And everybody loves a bit of that. Let's get some moments of the weekend with Paddy Power. Alvaro!
James, yes, there is a moment of the week in La Liga. It's a person of the week, in my opinion. It's Jorge Molina, the player from Granada, the striker from Granada. You should know that he got to the top flight when he was 29 years old. And you could have thought, yes, this guy is lucky because he's going to play a season or two in Primera. Well, he has played 10 already. And this weekend, he became the oldest player to score a hat-trick in La Liga at the age of 39 years and 241 days.
¡Súmale! ¡Súmale a Jorge Molina al tercero!
¡Hat-trick! ¡Hat-trick!
¡Apareció Molina cuando apretaba el Mallorca!
The second in the list was Joaquín. He did it against Athletic Club Bilbao a couple of years ago. I think that we reported on this. Well, Jorge Molina is officially the oldest ever scorer of a hat-trick in Spanish top-flight football.
Old man Molina, lovely stuff. Rafa, what about you?
Well, it's not a happy story, but it is nevertheless the story of the weekend, James. The first ever German game was suspended because of racism in the third division. Aaron Opoku, a striker for Osnabrück, was racially abused in the game at MSV Duisburg. And the referee sent everybody into the dressing room. And now the police are investigating to find... trying to find the person who racially abused him. And lots of solidarity for him. And I think it's a big moment because I think in the past, German football has been a little bit too passive and too slow when it comes to reacting to these situations.
We've seen similar incidents, of course, of late in English football as well. Jules later on will be along to tell us about yet more problems with supporters in France as well. Lift our spirits then, James Horncastle, with your moment of the weekend.
Well, this should be such a happy story, James, because remember we've been telling you about Salernitana, who are owned by the Lazio owner, Claudio Lotito. Only you can't own two top flight clubs. So they were given until the middle of December to find a new owner. They were unable to. And the league said, oh, well, we can't have you thrown out the league. You know, we don't want to be playing the rest of the season with only 19 teams. So don't worry, you're safe. Before the Salernitana Inter game, big banner from the Salernitana fans saying, hey, no, keep your promise, Gravina, the Italian Football Federation president. Throw us out. We do not want to be taken the mick out of any more by this Claudio Lotito guy. Stop, basta. And they were then beaten 5-0 Inter, who look ever better under Simone Inzaghi. So, Salernitana, I suppose not happy still to be in the top flight. And to be honest, I think, you know, if you're a promoted side, it should be such a a great ride being in Serie A for the first time, what, since 1999. And instead, this whole thing has cast a shadow over the experience. It's made it very bitter for the fans. And yeah, so that drags on and on.
Well, they may yet get their wish. There's a meeting, I think, on Tuesday of the Italian authorities, but it does look like they will stick with keeping 20 teams in the division and then bin them at the end of the campaign. All right, well, let's get on to what happened on the field then and beyond those stories over this weekend.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1-5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Intanto contropiede della Roma. Ebram, il tiro di destro, il gol del 4-1. Ebram, che è riuscito in diagonale a superare il portiere avversario. Gesto di stizza di Musso, ha chiuso male.
Saturday afternoon in Serie A saw Atalanta on a 6-game winning streak, taking on Jose Mourinho's slumping Giallorossi AS Roma. The result, James Horncastle, a resounding 4-1 victory for Mourinho. Have some of that, haters.
Yes, indeed. Tammy Abraham saying after the game, people thought it was impossible for us to come here and win, because Atalanta had won 6 in a row. It was their best start of the season ever. It looked like they were going to really contend for the title, along with Inter. And Roma had not won against the top four side in a long, long time. Jose Mourinho even went into specifics about it. Sort of 19 months, 400 days, 300 hours, 30 minutes. And he said, look, no one can say that anymore about us. Or at least they'll have to say it's only been 22 minutes since we beat a side in the top four. And it was a big win against an Atalanta side that had won the last 6 games in the league. You know, a team that looked like it was going to contend for the title with Inter as well. They may yet do. So to go to Bergamo and beat Atalanta was probably the biggest result that Mourinho's had so far that he's been at Roma. The Gazzetta on Sunday morning said Politici as the headline, which is like, who's finished now, I suppose. Because Allegri, who's also been under the, maybe not the same level of criticism as Mourinho, but you know, has been criticised. People have been saying that, yeah, maybe he's not the same manager he was as well. And in the performance itself from Roma, some really encouraging signs. You know, Tammy Abraham's started to score on a regular basis now. Remember, sort of in October time, he was often hitting the woodwork or missing chances he should have scored. I think he's now got 8 in his last 9 games. He became the first Englishman to score a brace in Serie A since David Platt for Sampdoria in 1995. Another Englishman was on the score sheet. That's never happened before in the history of Serie A for two Englishmen to score for the same team. Smaldini, Chris Smalling, he's been back in the side for the last 5 games. And I think his experience has helped Roma over that period. Nicolò Zaniolo scored his first goal in the league this season. This is something that it's kind of been used against Mourinho to say that, yeah, unlike your predecessor, Paolo Fonseca, you've had Zaniolo free and available all season, and he's not been as decisive, as effective as he was before. Obviously, he's had his injuries in that time frame too. But, I suppose Roma are on the rise. They've won 6 of their last 8 games in all competitions. But this was the most important one, because the others were against the likes of Genoa, Venezia, Spezia, Zoya Luhansk, CSKA Sofia. You know, games that a team coached by a manager of Mourinho's curriculum, as they would say, and also a team that has had this much investment should be winning. I'm just curious to see whether they can back it up in the new year when they have a very difficult start to 2022, where they'll be playing, I think, Juventus and Milan as well. So let's see if they can build on this win in those games as well.
They have Sampdoria coming up Tuesday night in a midweek round of fixtures in Serie A. A lot of excitement about Mourinho's choice of partners up front, of Zaniolo and Tammy Abraham, a kind of Tammiolo duo, which I hope we might see.
Sounds like a super Tuscan.
It does, doesn't it? It's but it was a very Mourinho performance, as you were mentioning. The most goals they've scored in a Serie A game this season, but the fewest shots they've managed in a Serie A game this season. Anyway, it leaves them level with Fiorentina and Juventus now in the group of teams right behind the Champions League sides. But there's a fair old gap still between those two groups. 6 points, in fact. Well, Atalanta, meanwhile, James, I'm intrigued to see, have responded to the defeat by hiring Lee Congerton from Leicester.
They haven't hired him yet, but this was a story broken by David Ornstein in The Athletic that Lee Congerton's next destination is likely to be Atalanta, perhaps as a general manager-style figure.
Quite a departure,
It is a departure because usually we've seen foreign investor groups buying into the league make non-Italian appointments in the recruitment department. Yeah, that's certainly been the case at more recently at Genoa, for example, Parma. So that is interesting. I'm curious to know what it means for Giovanni Sartori, who's kind of the brains really behind this operation. Atalanta was also the brains behind the kind of fairy tale at Chievo a few years ago. And, you know, whether this has anything to do with, you know, Gasp, the coach being a very demanding, very particular kind of coach when it comes to the style of player that he wants. Mm. Certainly some of Atalanta's recent signings have maybe not worked out. However, you look at the amount of money Sartori has been able to bring in from player sales. It is just phenomenal. You know, if anything, Sartori should be the headline maker in terms of where, yeah, if he were to leave and where he would go next. Because
maybe he should go to Leicester. Yeah. Anyway, all right, we'll talk more about City and what's going on a little bit further up the standings later on. Next up, let's go La Liga.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
In Spain, Real Madrid's league cut to 6 points this weekend and Atletico knocked down to fifth place by Real's 0-0 in Cadiz and just up the road, Sevilla's victory over Atletico Madrid. How about Julen Lopetegui's Sevilla, Álvaro?
Julen Lopetegui's Sevilla, if you take the whole calendar and you say how good they have been in the calendar year according to results, they've been really good. Then if you check it individually throughout the competitions, you cannot be so good with them or so benevolent with them because in the Cup or in the Champions League, they haven't gone or they haven't progressed very farther. But the truth is that they are very consistent in the domestic landscape. Last season, Sevilla managed to get to April with real options of winning La Liga title. And this Sevilla right now is up there with the best. I think that the win against Atletico de Madrid says a lot about how much they can compete in this moment with the Spanish clubs. I mean, they were this close to drawing with Real Madrid at Bernabeu. They beat Atletico de Madrid this time. They are playing against Barcelona in midweek, and I believe that they are strong favorites against them. So, yeah, Sevilla is in a good moment, and this Sevilla team in particular has a certain robustness that I don't see in the rest of the La Liga teams. They are not particularly quick. They suffer when the game becomes a box-to-box one, when there are quick transitions. But then they've got really big players who can actually offer you solid performances. And I think that it's no coincidence that Simeone had the word alto, tall, at the tip of his tongue the other day when talking about the game against Sevilla, because he referred about how tall Sevilla players are. In fact, one of the calls came after a corner kick. And I think that Simeone, in a way, that he may not understand very well. I think that he admires that from Sevilla. The fact that Sevilla have like very physical players actually who can inflict you pain in corners, set pieces. And for me, it was no coincidence that Simeone revealed this after the game, that he thought that Sevilla players were tall and in a way that he admires this as well. I think that that tells you a little bit about maybe Simeone is not the happiest man with the light squad that he's got now. Mm. This Atletico de Madrid has frailties. We have spoken about them before. And yeah, it's a very meaningful scoreline. It's a meaningful, very meaningful result because Rayo Vallecano has surpassed Atletico de Madrid, has climbed over Atletico de Madrid on the table. And we are talking about game week 17, game week 18. And this has to be corrected very quickly. Simeone knows about that, but he made an argument in his press conference as well at the end of the game that it was a little bit circular. He was saying, when I got Atletico de Madrid 10 years ago, they were in this position, they were out of the Champions League, now we are back here again. So there is an acknowledgement that the team hasn't regressed, but there is time to improve it.
Okay, well, yeah, they're currently lying fifth at the moment, having lost three games in a row in the league for the first time under Diego Simeone. Luis Suarez, who clearly not very tall, is on a 7-game streak without scoring in all competitions. Got very upset when he was taken off in the course of that game. And Sevilla close in, meanwhile, on Real Madrid, sort of. 6 points now the gap after Real Madrid's goalless draw away in Cadiz. Ancelotti seeing his 8-game win streak come to an end here, but it was a severely weakened Real Madrid team.
It was a weakened Real Madrid team. I think Luka Modric's absence was the biggest of all because this is a player that Real Madrid needs a lot right now. His performance against Atletico de Madrid 9 days ago was phenomenal, and I think Real Madrid missed the creativity of Luka Modric. I think that this is the kind of game that resembles a little bit what happened against Sheriff Tiraspol back in the Champions League game day 2 or 3, when Sheriff snatched a victory from Santiago Bernabeu, even though Real Madrid did everything to win that game, but that didn't happen because Real Madrid was not clinical enough. In that time, Sheriff goalkeeper was heroic. This time, Real Madrid approached Ledesma's box a lot, but then they didn't have like really clear chances. I think that there was no heroic performance from Ledesma, Cádiz goalkeeper. I think that the defense of Cádiz help each other very well, they stayed together. There were many blocks in the edge of the box by Cadiz players as well. So it was a very good defensive performance by them. I think Real Madrid shot a lot, Real Madrid dominated a lot, but strangely they didn't create a lot of big chances. Is this one of these games? It was going to happen at some point, but I personally didn't think that Real Madrid was going to drop points against Cádiz this weekend. I thought that it was more likely that they would drop them against Athletic Club Bilbao at San Mamés in the midweek. But yes, it happened. And there are a couple of good things for Real Madrid, of course, like Eden Hazard. He looked busy to me, at least in the second half. Not impressive, not brilliant, but at least he looked committed and he did a couple of very good link-up games with Vinicius and Benzema. And then I think that Luka Jovic, he is also back on track and he has become one of these number 12 Real Madrid players, as we say in Spanish, this player that can come out from the bench and offer something different. So yes, it was a draw. I think that this is a draw that Real Madrid can afford at the minute. But of course, I think that Real Madrid's season is also rated in relation to how their opponents are doing. Barcelona is not doing well, Atletico de Madrid either, so that enhances what Real Madrid has been done this year, if that makes sense. Also, they have qualified in the Champions League for the next knockout stage. So, all things considered, I think that Real Madrid should have won it. They didn't win it, but they are still in a very comfortable position.
Mm. 36 shots and 82% possession. By the way, that's the highest tally of any team in terms of shots in a La Liga match without scoring since Opta began their records in 2003. Well, attention now turns to whether Sevilla can keep the pressure up with their game in hand, which they'll be playing on Tuesday night against Barcelona. We'll get your thoughts on that a little bit later on, what Barcelona did this weekend against Elche. But next up, far up, the Raphael Honigstein, we're heading for the Bundesliga.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Woohoo!
Yeah, super.
Indeed. All done for the year, Rafa. All wrapped up for the season, in fact. Bayern, 9 points clear now.
Yeah. It's all over, James. Was it ever on, I wonder? Under Julian Nagelsmann, Bayern have been playing some really good stuff. And Dortmund, the same inconsistency that we've seen before. Just a different flavour.
So specifically this weekend, Bayern with a 4-0 win over Wolfsburg, featuring another record from Bob Lewandowski.
Zentral auf Upamecano, sucht wieder in der Mitte Lewandowski! Da ist das Ding! 4-3! Der 43. Treffer von Robert Lewandowski, Rekordman in diesem Kalenderjahr.
Well, Rekordman in diesem Kalenderjahr, whatever that means. What did he do this time?
Most goals in a calendar year, although I sort of refuse to take these made-up statistics very seriously.
Well, they've run out of real
calendar
ones
year. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but not if they are they go up to 91 like Lionel Messi did in 2012.
Yeah,
that was
then,
insane.
Of course, it's different.
Yeah. Well, he's only on 43 for 2021. Robert Lewandowski, and certainly is striker of the year. Well done, UEFA, for that. And as you say, Bayern are absolutely flying along. Do you accept stats about goals for first half of the season? 56 for them, given that the best ever is from 1971-72, and that was 101 for the whole season. They're well on course to absolutely smash that.
Yeah, it's incredible. And unfortunately, it's a classic case of the law of diminishing returns, because the better Bayern play, the less respect they'll get for it. And I think it's worth reiterating that Nagelsmann has done a particularly good job of coaching this team and making them play better than last season under Hansi Flick. Maybe they're at the same level that they were under Pep Guardiola now, certainly statistically. If you look at the underlying numbers, they are completely in a league of their own. And this is with lots of issues this year. You know, Joshua Kimmich not being there for 2 months, a few injury problems. As a club, there was a lot of disquiet behind the scenes because the Qatar controversy and the club members staging a sort of revolt against it. But as a team, they're just unstoppable at the moment.
Mm. Certainly too much for Wolfsburg, who notched up their 7th straight defeat, already, of course, on their second manager of the season. Anyway, 9 points clear now, Bayern, of the second place side in the Bundesliga, because they, Dortmund, did a Dortmund. Losing 3-2 to Hertha. They were leading at half-time as well, Rafa.
Yeah, how they lost control of that game, I don't know. Well, I do know, actually, because they just made silly mistakes. Julian Brandt, who played so well, made a horrific mistake for the third goal, and Dortmund had just looked so slow. Witzel, again, showing that, I think, physically, unfortunately, he's a little bit over the hill, which explains why Dortmund are quite keen to let him go. If a suitable offer comes in, they're hoping that Juventus will want another 30-plus midfielder because they don't have enough of them. Yeah, it's frustrating.
Swap with Aaron Ramsey?
Or with Erling Haaland coming in as a make-weight.
Yeah. Pjanic is over there as well.
Yeah, Pjanic. Yeah, it's got to be Pjanic.
Enough. Come on. Have some respect.
It's frustrating, really frustrating. And it was interesting to see Marco Rose then having a go at Didi Hamann, the Sky pundit, for being biased effectively against Dortmund, which shows you, I think, how sensitive they've become to that criticism, which I think is wholly warranted. And also, he was trying to understand why the Dortmund teams sometimes just don't show up, even in the same game. You have one half where they're quite good, and the second half they lack all the basics and try to rely on the football, but their football is good. It's better than anyone else's, below Bayern, I think. But they have a sense of, kind of a weightlessness to their game. This kind of lack of gravitas, lack of seriousness. And it's annoying, because this year you can make the excuse, I think, for them that Bayern are too strong, and I think it's going to be really hard, even for a well-performing Dortmund team, to keep up with them. But when Bayern were weak in the Kovac years, there was a real chance for Dortmund, and Dortmund missed it. And I think Dortmund should have won at least one championship in those years, in 1819 or 1920. The fact that they didn't then makes this Bayern run as if it was sort of never in doubt that they would win 9 in a row and it would be 10. But actually, there was a chance. Unfortunately, they've blown it.
Mm. Good result for Hertha, though, who move away now from the relegation positions. They're up to 11th place. They're only just behind RB Leipzig, who've fallen all the way down to 10th. They had a pretty disastrous weekend as well, losing 2-0 at home to Arminia Bielefeld, Rafa.
Yeah, I mean, losing at home to Bielefeld is always a pretty bad thing to do. Bielefeld, the second worst team in the league, and Leipzig had a bit of positive momentum, or so we thought, under their new coach, Domenico Tedesco, but it's already stalled, that positive momentum, after a couple of indifferent results or disastrous results as far as the Bielefeld game was concerned. And I think they'll be much improved in the second half. I wouldn't necessarily think of them as a club in crisis, but it's not just them, James. I mean, they have 22 points. They were the second best team in the Bundesliga last year. Gladbach are in 14th. Wolfsburg, the fourth best team last year, and 13th. There's a whole upside down sort of situation for these sides. And once again, the Bundesliga below Bayern and Dortmund, wholly unpredictable. It's just something that I think doesn't seem to resonate a lot with people outside Germany. Right now, Freiburg are third, Leverkusen are fourth, and Hoffenheim are fifth. I mean, that is just really incredible stuff. But
why do you think, Rafa, behind Bayern, that so many of the big clubs have lost their way?
Well, I think the managerial changes explain a lot.
But are they not an effect rather than a cause?
No, because they already changed in the summer before the season.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
And part of that was Bayern.
Part of that was the knock-on effect from Bayern, the Bayern domino. But Dortmund, I mean, Dortmund started it with Marco Rose. Mm. And that then needed a new coach for Gladbach. And then that needed a new coach for Frankfurt. And that then needed a new coach for Wolfsburg. So there was this massive domino effect. And the only side that's really been okay, if you want, is of course Bayern with Nagelsmann. Rose to an extent, because it hasn't been a disaster. They're still in a decent position in second. Mm. And Frankfurt. But Frankfurt have only recently, I think, started making some headway under Oliver Glasner. So it's a lack of continuity, I think it's fair to say. But of course, there's also a lack of financial firepower, which means that if you get things a little bit wrong, there isn't that much to fall back upon in terms of individual quality. Teams tend to function as collectives. And when a collective is a little bit off, then you see quite drastic changes in performance levels. I think
there's no superstars to rescue the
sinking ship. That's probably the best explanation I can find.
All that said, Rafa, when I watched Leverkusen against Betis, they look far better than them. I mean, they were very impressive in the Europa League, I have to say. Very quick, very creative, I would say, playing a very positive football as well.
Yeah, no, they're a decent side and they're having a good season, but they're 15 points behind Bayern. So it's not enough, unfortunately, to have a proper title race. The other problem, this is something we also talked about, is the lack of sort of brand names in the Bundesliga. It's nice that Freiburg
Julian
and Hoffenheim...
Julian brand names or yeah, the other kind?
It's nice that Hoffenheim and Freiburg are doing well, and maybe right. One of them will qualify for the Champions League, and it's going to be pretty exciting. But not many people in Germany will really care, because these are small clubs. Whereas Hamburg and Bremen and Schalke, they're all still in the second division. And, you know, proper big clubs like Stuttgart are struggling this year, Gladbach are struggling. So it is a weird sort of imbalance between what the league could and should be and the reality of it.
Mm, all right. There's one very good team in it. But anyway, there you go. Running away with it at the halfway point. Next up on the Totally Football Show European Edition, we hear from Jules.
Hey, why is it called Boxing Day? 9 Premier League games on. It should be called Football Day.
Yeah, that old leftover turkey sandwich day.
What?
You definitely ate more than 9 of them last year. Yeah.
It's a feast for football fans on December the 26th, and Paddy Power's got a knockout offer just for Boxing Day. It's a completely free £5 bet builder to use on any of the 9 Premier League matches on Boxing Day. Paddy Power!
Pretty much online bet, but a bet's only min 2 plus legs. Max 1 free £5 bet per customer. Must have previously deposited to avail. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
All right, time now to hear from Julien Laurence. Jules.
Hi, James.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Excellent. Now, no French league action this weekend because it was the Cup. And once again, more fan trouble. Jules, what are they doing in France? Because it doesn't appear to be working.
No. And again, it's not a surprise. I told you and I told the listeners and the boys that when you're too soft, it happens again. And it will happen again. This time it was the Paris FC, so the other Paris team hosting Lyon in the French Cup at the Stade Charlety, which is in central Paris, which should have been a great occasion because Paris FC are doing well in the second division. I think they've got decent hopes of going up and being promoted to Ligue 1. And this was a good game for them to test themselves against a good Ligue 1 team. Lyon, as we know with Peter Bosch, had been really up and down, and I think they could do with a good performance as well. So you could expect a really nice game. It's 1-1 at halftime, and then at halftime, it all kicks off in the stands. It seems like some PSG ultras got into the stadium, and Charlety is a lovely stadium where you can, unless there's big security, but you can walk all around, basically. It's not divided into sections, if you want. The only section that was properly structured, if you want, was the away stands for the Lyon fans. But the thing is, some of the PSG ultras who bought their tickets very normally to get into the game, then went across to the away end, basically, and starting provoking the Lyon fans, who then, obviously, there was very little security, so they easily sort of breached their away end to join the PSG fans, starting fighting with each other. Okay, that's one thing. If you want hooligans fighting each other, they do what they want. Okay. The problem is that once the sort of PSG ultras sort of like left, if you want, or retracted, whatever the words, then the Lyon fans, the Lyon ultras and hooligans starting hitting and punching pretty much everybody that was in the high sight, including women, families, children, small children, with belts, with big sticks, with everything they could find. You know those things that you put on your knuckles?
Brass knuckles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With that, I mean, imagine a Lyon grown man, ultras, hooligan, hitting a 10-year-old or 12-year-old.
They were hitting kids, Jules.
Yeah. And I just think, like, okay, I think they were provoked at the beginning. It's true, by some PSG ultras who came in. Paris FC said they were not aware of PSG fans coming in, that the police and the security never told them to get heavier on security to prevent crowd trouble because PSG fans and Lyon fans would be there to fight. But it's still not good enough from a Lyon point of view, the way they didn't control their fans. They knew that they had high-risk fans travelling from Lyon to Paris for the game. They've got very strange relationship with their ultras and especially the fascist side of their hooligans,
right.
which have created problems everywhere. Remember at the City game, one of them doing the Nazi salute. They've had banners with Nazi signs on them, like, you know, crazy things before that they never really eradicate. And now it's coming back again. And it's not the first time that it's Lyon again. I think this time they will hit very, very hard. But it's such a bad look once again for French football.
Yeah, not least, as you say, because it's not just a question of fans attacking other fans, but or at least ultras attacking other ultras, but innocent bystanders caught in the middle. Really shocking tales there. Well, as you say, hopefully this time the reaction will be a bit more effective. It's Paris FC then, they're ripe for promotion. We could be seeing a Parisian derby in
Ligue 1. Yeah, we could. There's a big friendship between the two. I mean, there's a lot of children who go from... So Paris FC is an amazing grassroots club at the beginning. I've played numerous times against them and they always had... They had some of the top teams in the country for under 13, under 15, under 17 playing in the top league. And then often those kids go to academies all around the country, the PSG one. There's been a few, but also... not Monaco, wherever you want. There's a lot of them, like Mamadou Sakho, for example, who started at PFC and then went to PSG, but many others like that. And they'd never made it to the top flight. This would be the first time. So they've been building a project with Pierre Ferracci, who is the owner, the chairman, who is very close to Emmanuel Macron, the president. You know, that helps, I think, for a lot of things. And yeah, it would be great to see them there for sure.
Okay, what's going to happen with this game with Lyon? Will it be replayed or awarded to them or what?
Yeah, it's a bit tricky, and this time it's not the same discipline committee than the issues that we've had in Ligue 1, because obviously this is competition for the French Federation. So it'd be very interesting if maybe they decide to take a much tougher stance than what the league have done. It looks like the game could be not replayed and that Lyon could lose the game because of the crowd trouble, even if the fans were provoked. That's why they're trying to put forward. I mean, we had another amazing Jean-Michel Aulas cameo where he said, well, you know, you can't just blame the Lyon fans. Well, no, but, you know, there was a lot to do. It's the Lyon fans who attacked women and children and families who had nothing to do with the fight between PSG Ultras and Lyon Ultras. So it was quite crazy. So it looks like it could be really, really tough for Lyon and that game could be won for Paris FC even without playing the second half.
Crikey. All right. Meantime, loads of top flight sides were knocked out this weekend in the Coupe de France by lower league or even amateur opposition. This does happen every season, though. Are they all just pulling a Spurs, if you know?
No, it's not that. I mean, you never really know how much the top clubs.
Troyes got knocked out by League Two strugglers Nancy, despite the fact that Nancy finished the game with eight players. Yeah. Metz were put out by fourth tier side Bergerac-Périgord, also on penalties. And then Angers, also from Ligue 1, were put out by a fifth tier side, Linas Molery. Yeah. Right. They're from the suburbs of Paris, you know.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I know them really well. I played in that ground a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And the two coaches, they've got sort of double act as coaches, have great history. They used to coach Croix in Savoie, and they had amazing success since, I think, 07 was the first time that Croix went really far in the Coupe de France, although they were fourth division team at the time, or fifth division team even. And they even, I think, reached the quarterfinals or the last 16. So those two coaches have history with the Coupe de France and really good ones as well. And it was such a professional performance from Linas Molery. They were really good, well organized, played really good football. The guy who scored the two goals, Pascalino, who's from Guinea, who's called the Guinean Griezmann. Doesn't look like Griezmann at all the way he plays, but that's how they nicknamed him. I know James Horncastle loves the nickname. But yeah, they were really good. And it's funny because they play Amiens in the next round now with the second division team. And they were all gutted. The draw was made and they were gutted because they wanted a PhD or Marseille.
They were hoping for someone from French Polynesia, probably. No?
Or Monaco. Or someone a bit more exotic. But it's another League Two team. They beat Dunkerque before beating Angers. So they've done League Two, Ligue 1, and they play another League Two at the start of Jan. And I would not rule them out at all. I think they can easily beat it. They look really good. They've got, this is the strength every time we say, James, but a lot of those teams in the third, fourth, fifth division have rejected players from academies. And French academies are really, really good. So when you don't make it for Montpellier, PSG, Monaco, Lyon, whoever you are,
right,
then you're still playing, but you play down a league or two, and then you end up being a really good player in a good fourth division team, which means that when you play the Coupe de France against the Ligue 1 or Ligue 2 team, once you want to prove something, but also you're very good in a team that has a lot of rejects like you from academies, that makes that team really good. That's why the gap between the top two leagues and the rest is actually quite close.
Le vrai magique de la Coupe.
La vraie magie de la Coupe, yes.
Oui. Okay. Well, PSG made it through, though. So the triple is still on. They got past, fifth-tier side, Anton Fini, Oulnois, beat them 3-0. They put Kylian Mbappe up against them, and he scored a brace.
It's his birthday today, James. We record this on Monday. Happy birthday, Kylian. I know you're listening.
Ah,
we love you
voilà.
Loads. 23 today.
23. Remarkable.
Yeah. They also handed his debut to El Shaddai Bichiabu, who became the youngest ever PSG player at 16 and 7 months, beating the former record held by Kingsley Coman, who was 16 and 8 months, so just a month younger for El Shaddai, who is the centre-back, who is like 7 foot, left-footed, really talented on the ball, but like physically a monster. And they've got high hopes, really high hopes for him. He's amazing. And I'm not sure what you were doing at 16 and 7 months. I can't remember what I was doing, but certainly not playing for PSG, unfortunately. So well done. We saw a lot of youngsters. Xavi Simons started and was really good. I hope they can keep him. But you're right. It was Kylian's show again. Two goals, 42nd and 43rd of the calendar year.
Incredible.
And also another great story, James, on the French Cup is we had a team from Mayotte, you know, the small island near Madagascar.
Oh.
They call the Jumeau de Mzoisia. And they play in the
French 6th division. What are they called?
The Jumeau de Mzoisia.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure. So Jumeau is twins.
Okay.
And Mzoisia, I think, is the name of the neighborhood where they play in Mayotte.
Right.
So 6th division is great already that they reached that. That stage, and they played against Bordeaux in Bordeaux as well. So they traveled all the way and they were great. And they had been really good coming into this latest round. And they had loads of articles in all the newspapers and all the TV and radio and everything you can imagine. And in L'Equipe, one of the midfielders said that his mates, they really believed they could beat Bordeaux as well. Bordeaux, who haven't been playing well at all in Ligue 1. So he says, yeah, my friend asked me how we were feeling. So I said, we're feeling great. So he put a bet, €2,000 on Les Jumeaux to win. Yeah, they lost 10-0.
No.
Which I think either choose your friend carefully and wisely, or maybe don't answer when they ask you how you're feeling. That's a heavy loss. 2K. They lost 10-0. They were 3-0 down at halftime. It was great to see them there, but I feel a bit for the friend, to be fair.
Well, indeed. Jules, that was fabulous and a nice way to lift our spirits a bit after that very depressing news about the latest trouble with supporters. We'll be hearing from you later on, though, when we unwrap our secret Santa gifts.
Yes.
Are you excited? Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, next up, though, back to Italy.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet, minimum 4+ legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
Back in Italy now with James Horncastle, and a word on the Serie A title race, which saw, Friday night, Inter throw down a bit of a marker with a 5-0 victory away at Salernitana. Now, James, you mentioned Salerno. Football in Salerno, not the happiest place right now, but Inter on this phenomenal run of form. That's 6 straight victories. The last 3 of them have been 3-0, 4-0, and now 5-0. So you kind of worry for their next opponents, Torino, who they'll be facing on Wednesday. But here they looked absolutely magnificent.
They really did. They're playing some sublime football. There's a lot of pundits, columnists at the moment opining in Italy that this is the best football Inter played in decades. I suppose it's still surprising, given that Conte walked out. They sold Lukaku, Hakimi, and obviously Eriksen this week rescinded his contract because he's unable to play in Italy with a implanted defibrillator. And I suppose when you take 3 players out of the team and you replace them with 3 guys who are essentially going to be starting for you most of the time, it does have quite a big impact on how you can affect a change of style on the team. Yeah, it's a team that plays the same system, 3-5-2, but there's more freedom of expression. There are more rotations, by which I mean in terms of positional play. We're seeing these flowing team moves with players popping up in spaces and roles that you wouldn't expect. And I think Simone Inzaghi's really built on the hard work that Antonio Conte did over the last 2 years, which was turning a team of chumps into champions. That's a bit of a provocation, giving the talent that Inter had, but certainly they had a complex for many years, I think, at Inter, which they weren't able to get over. And he got them over that. I found it quite interesting listening to one of the players, Alessandro Bastoni, was saying, just having the Scudetto on their shirts, for him it's new because he's a young player, but certainly for all these Inter players, even the more experienced ones, it's new and it's a source of pride. It's helping them kind of play with the swagger, you know, because they've done it. They've won the league title for the first time in 10 or 11 years. And, you know, as I mentioned, you know, their sporting director, Pierre Arcelia, had this line last week, which was, you know, Conte built this incredible skyscraper, which, you know, is kind of the pride of the city, at least if you're on the blue and black side of it. But Inzaghi is this sort of... you know, wonderful kind of interior designer who's coming in, right, and just sort of making everything look very nice, and certainly attracting more people to it, I suppose.
He's certainly doing well with these fixtures, if you know. And yeah,
well, so that's the thing, James.
Yeah,
I mean, they have been running up the score recently, and yeah, they have been rightfully praised for the star with which they've played. But you know, I mean, smashing Salernitana bottom of the table. Cagliari before that, second bottom of the table, beating Venezia and Spezia as well. You know, I mean, you would expect Inter to win. They would have won those games, I think, under Conte. But it's still nevertheless exciting to see a team make these games look so easy.
Right.
And then we'll see in January when they've got a series of really big fixtures, eight games in 40 days, a real tour de force against all the top sides. Champions League obviously resumes in February. And I think that'll be another stress test, if you like, of this Inzaghi's Inter.
Mm. Although I don't think they'll find it easy on Wednesday against Ivan Juric's Torino. We shall see. Meantime, it has been an incredible run for them from the derby onwards, recovering from 7 points back from Milan and now 4 points clear. It's now Napoli who've come back to second in Serie A after Sunday night's 1-0 victory for them away at Milan. A hugely forgettable game, that is, apart from the massive controversy at the end when Milan thought they'd had a late equaliser through Frank Kessié, only to have the goal disallowed because Olivier Giroud, who'd been fouled and then was lying prone on the ground with a defender on top of him, was called as offside. We've seen previous such aberrations apologised for by the VAR officials. Has there been any word about this?
Well, naturally, I mean, there's been a lot of reaction in the papers, but the Referees Association has come out this morning standing by the decision and have explained it and say, look, it was absolutely correct to do it by the letter of the law. It did feel strange because ultimately, Olivier Giroud was like a mattress for Juan Jesus. There's not really much he can do. This has been one of the kind of controversies of the weekend. What is active and what is inactive offside? When is a player interfering? When is a player not interfering? Because it also, the circumstances were different in the Roma game, but Atalanta were very aggrieved because they felt that they'd scored an equaliser with half an hour to go and they're playing at home. Yeah, their tails were going to be up. Would the outcome of the game have been different? Shoulda, woulda, coulda. And, you know, it repeated itself on Sunday in this game, which, you know, could be massive. A massive decision. A decision, as I say, that the Referees Association believes was the correct one. But, you know, given how tight it is between third and fourth, and then the form that the likes of Roma, Juventus and Fiorentina are picking up, yeah, dropping 2 points, losing all the points in this sense, could be very costly for Milan in the long run.
Absolutely. And of that, with that gap, 6 points between Atalanta, the team in fourth, and Roma, Juve and Fiorentina, do you see one of those sides? Do you think it's a realistic prospect that someone else is going to break into the top four conversation? And if so, who?
Well, Fiorentina have got... I know Rafi loves his calendar of the year statistics, but this weekend, Dusan Vlahovic matched the Serie A record, which is held by Cristiano Ronaldo for scoring more than 33 goals in the calendar year. He's a superstar. You know, he doesn't want to leave in January. I think, you know, there will be an auction for him in the summer. They're a really well-coached team. They're not in Europe. Unlike Juventus will be in the Champions League, Roma is still in the Conference League. They're going to add Jonathan Ikone by the looks of it in January. Maybe it's too much to say that they can break into the top four, because I already think the top four is quite consolidated. They are the most improved team this year. along with Torino. And when you've got a player who is, for his age, you know, only Haaland is putting up better numbers, you know, you can dare to dream.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, we've still got our Secret Santa to come, of course. But next up, it's a little bit more of La Liga.
We're all driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to The Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
All right then, Alvaro. Barcelona facing Sevilla on Tuesday. They ended a winless run of three matches, the Catalans, on the weekend with a 3-2 victory over Elche, who are just outside the relegation zone. What did you make of their performance? What did you make as well of Xavi's comments, I think, before the game, saying about, I've not been here for 6 years and my word, some stuff has changed at Barcelona since I left. And
yeah,
what are their prospects against Sevilla?
Well, starting by the first question, I think that Xavi was baffled and probably he's finding some things at Barcelona that he never thought that he was going to find, because probably if there is any orthodox man at Barcelona to the point of being too dogmatic, it's Xavi. And he likes positional game, and he likes to take his opinions sometimes to the extreme, to the point that sometimes in the past he has not rated some other clubs that have beaten Barcelona playing in a certain way. But yes, Xavi said this after the game, when Barcelona beat Elche 3-2. He was not happy with a few things during the game. He again praised the youngsters. He even hinted that this generation could be better than the previous one of Busquets and Pedro and Fabregas. I don't know if he went too far with that. But the truth is that for Barcelona, it's been a blessing to find just in a matter of 3 or 4 months, Nico, Gavi, then Abde, who seems to be a very good winger, Jutla, the guy who scored the goal the other day, the opener against Espanyol, he seems to be a good player, the opener against Elche, seems to be a good player, former Espanyol Academy player, Jutla. And yeah, Xavi was very happy with that, but he pointed that the lack of knowledge of some of his players. I don't know how far back we can take this critic, because when Luis Enrique was there, Barcelona was playing well. The only problem was that, as with PSG, there were 3 players who didn't defend, and that cost the team a lot, but Barcelona positionally was playing very well. But then with Valverde, you could see a little bit the decadence. Lionel Messi was becoming more and more important to cover many problems that the team had on the pitch. Same thing with Setien, and it all got exacerbated with Ronald Koeman. So yes, there has been a problem in there, but at the same time, having these youngsters is a blessing. The only problem here is that you wonder, how much can you demand to these guys who are not even 20 years old? Because you may burn them out in the same way that you have done with Pedri last season. He played 70 games and now we still don't know when he's going to return, that it's very likely that he won't play in a football game until 2022, meaning that he has been out for more than 2.5 months. There are managers who rate Barcelona, this Barcelona, and personally I rate them, but I think that they don't know how to keep the possession or how to keep the scoreline when they get the first goal. I still remember, probably you don't because this is a very small detail, but when PSG went to Barcelona back in February and they beat them 4-1, I remember that Gerard Piqué was vociferating to the players, please keep a long possession. That sounded like just a demand from one of the main Barcelona players, But it sounded so basic because Barcelona normally knows how to do these things. So I think that that message of Piqué in February has like a continuity with this thing that Xavi said after the game against Elche, that some basics have gone missing at Barcelona. But then some managers, like for example Julen Lopetegui, who will play against Barcelona in midweek, said that this is the best Barcelona he has seen in a while, because Lopetegui understands football in the same way as Xavi, probably. But yeah, maybe he went a little bit too far with his opinion, and of course there is a discrepancy between Julen Lopetegui and what Thomas Müller said 2 weeks ago when he said that this Barcelona couldn't compete in Europe, right? So yeah, there must be a middle point between all that, but it's true that Barcelona, right now, they've got a hell of a problem ahead of them, 1.3 billion debt, but then they've got these youngsters that I can guarantee you that in 5 or 6 years, these guys, all of them, are going to be playing for the Spanish national team unless someone very good comes up and takes their place. But Nico, Gavi, who scored a beautiful goal, as beautiful as the one from Rakitic on Saturday, I don't know which one is better, totally different. Gavi scored a solo goal, Rakitic a thunderbolt. Gavi, Nico, and all the players that I mentioned before, all together with Fati, they are top quality material.
They're a bit like Schrodinger's Catalans, if you like. We don't know if they're really going to be really good or really bad. But Tuesday night's game against Sevilla will be an interesting test of that, and a key match in a couple of key battles at the top end of the table. Barcelona, with a win here, will be right on the fringes of the Champions League places again. Sevilla, equally with a victory, will cut Real Madrid's lead down to just 3 points. Ooh.
Yeah, it's going to be very entertaining. I don't know how many players will Sevilla be able to recover ahead of the game, because the two fullbacks pick an injury, Montiel and Acuña. Lucas Ocampos left the pitch on a stretcher, but he didn't have any big injury. It was a concussion, and just for precaution, he had to leave like this. Ocampos scored the winning goal against Atlético de Madrid. I think that Sevilla, just for the seniority of their players, just because they've got a really robust team, they should come as favorites against Barcelona, because this Barcelona team is obviously not perfect. I mean, they've got many flaws, they've got many youngsters who have had maybe 6 or 7 games in the top flight only. So these players are not reliable for 90 minutes. Sevilla should come as a favorite, but the outcome of this game is quite interesting as well, because if Barcelona wins, it's going to have like a really positive effect ahead of 2022, because they will finish the year in Champions League spots, which is something that 2 or 3 weeks ago seemed to be difficult. But Real Sociedad hasn't been perfect. Same thing applies to some other teams that are playing at the top of the table, and Barcelona has had the chance to catch up. And also Real Madrid are playing at Bilbao, so if Real Madrid drops points at Bilbao, which is something that has happened many times throughout the last century and a half, well, I think Barcelona or Sevilla, whoever comes out as a winner, will consider the midweek big victory.
Excellent. All right. Well, that Real Madrid game away at Athletic is on Wednesday. Right. And that'll wrap it up for La Liga in 2021. All right. Well, hey, we're almost at the end of today's Totally Football Show, our last Euro one of this year. So next up, let's break out the prezzies. All right. This is very exciting. Listener, we've inaugurated a first ever Totally Football Show European edition Secret Santa competition. Do you have Secret Santa in Germany, Rafa?
Yes, we do. I believe it's called Wichteln.
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 What does that mean?
Secret Santa.
What? All of it?
It's just a different name for that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Secret Santa would be der geheime Weihnachtsmann.
That's better. We'll go
but
with
we
that.
Don't have that. We have okay. Just Wichteln.
Wichteln. Alvaro, in Spain?
Yeah, we don't call it Santa Claus Secreto. We call it El Amigo Invisible, the Invisible
Ooh,
Friend.
Invisible Friend.
I like that.
Right. Excellent. Well, Rafa, the exciting news is I think I can reveal that you are James's Invisible Friend. So let's see what you have got him. Getting quite emotional here. James, how do you feel?
Wow, un'estate italiana. Yeah, the Italian summer which kept on going until they didn't make the World Cup. and they'll be looking for the qualifiers, the playoffs in
right.
Yeah. It's a very wow.
That music, I should say, that's the old theme tune from 1990 from their road to the semi-final then. Eduardo Benato and Gianna Nannini, sister of the Formula One driver, curiously. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Raf. That was a...
You're very welcome.
All right. Yeah. Emotional. Excellent. All right. Well, while James dries his eyes, let's hear what he got. Jules.
Leo Messi, the one who is killing my baby. Counter-attack. Please, I don't want to hear any more. He hasn't scored yet. And how many Cristiano has scored and all of that?
They're checking it.
Yeah, so Jules is off at his Christmas party at the moment. But here was his reaction earlier.
Oh, James, I love you so much. I was hoping that whoever picked me in the draw, in the San Jacinto draw, would go for that. It was certainly the highlight of the year, if you're a PSG fan. And for us on the Goal Show, when I, you know, it's rare that we get to be live on a goal like this. Usually we say, oh, there's been a goal. And with my voice, you hear if PSG have scored. But not often I have to, you know, I have the pleasure of being actually live on when that move happens. So
when selecting that Secret Santa gift, I thought, you know, what can you give the man who has everything?
He probably already has that, though, don't you think?
And I just thought, what better gift for Jules than Jules himself?
Jules himself. I should explain. That was from our Champions League roundup where we bring the goals as they happen. And Jules had the great fortune to happen to be talking about a Paris Saint-Germain game while Leo Messi actually scored in it. What are the odds of that? Anyway, he was so, so grateful. Bless. Excellent. And he had something, Alvaro, for you.
Abre para Iñaki Williams, le puede pegar con la derecha, chuta Williams. Y gol. Gol. Madre de mi vida, qué golazo. Qué golazo de Iñaki Williams. Habilitó pierna derecha, le pegó a la escuadra izquierda y la clava Iñaki Williams. Qué gol. Qué coño, qué gol.
Qué coño, qué gol,
yeah.
My word. Just for anyone who's not as up on recent Athletic Cup winning exploits, what was that we were listening to?
This is the time we won the Super Cup. We hadn't won a title for 37 years, wow. And Iñaki Williams scored that goal that made us champion again. I know that it sounds like a small title for you guys, I don't know, whoever is out there who supports a team that wins every year. But for us, it meant a lot. And I am 38, so the last time Athletic Club Bilbao won something, I don't remember it, obviously. So thank you, Jules. Thank you, Jules. That was top class.
That was nice. I think I was tempted if I were to get Alvaro to do one of those classic El Chiringuito intros for the summer.
Magnificent. All right, then. Well, that just leaves one present, and it's from Alvaro for Raphael Honigstein.
Dann macht es Bums, ja, und dann Kranz.
Und alle schreien,
der Müller!
Ja, was?
Dann macht es Bums, dann gibt's ein Tor.
Und alle schreien, der Müller vor!
There you go. Dann macht es Bums. Then it goes boom, Rafa.
Then it goes boom. And unfortunately, it won't go boom anymore because Gerd Müller sadly passed away this year. But this is his very well-known top 10. Don't know if it charted, but yeah, his big hit from the late 1960s.
That's one Gerd Müller record that can never be equaled for me. As you say, a poignant reminder of the great man in the year that he left the world of football.
Thank you, Alvaro. I'm quite touched by this.
There you go.
Thank you. I knew that you're a fan of music, I know that you go an emotional man as well. So yeah, it's the perfect combination. And Gerd Müller, what a legend. It's a real, real, real sad news that he left in 2021.
Indeed.
Indeed. All right, well, there you go. That was Secret Santa. I can only hope, listener, that your Christmas is as rich in emotion and smiles when it rolls around. That pretty much wraps it up, though, for the Totally Football Show Euro edition. We have a regular show coming up on Thursday, so perhaps you'll be joining us for that. But for now, it's time to say many, many thanks for all your hard work and illuminating discourse over the course of this calendar year, excuse me, Rafa, to James Horncastle and Julien Laurens and Alvaro Romeo and Rafa, you too. Producer Charlie, as ever, at the helm. Listener, you with the ears. Many, many thanks from all of us here. See you in the clubs.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.